Case number 12-1470 NL, NL Gas Pipeline Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Watson for Petitioner Jersey City, Mr. Zimmerman for Environmental Petitioners, Ms. Amakil for the respondent, and Mr. Elwood for the interveners.
Good morning. May it please the court, Jason Watson for petitioner to the City of Jersey City. The starting point for Jersey City's claims against the commission is that on its face, the statutory structure of the commission's funding implicates the possible temptation doctrine, the constitutional bias doctrine. The 42 U.S.C. 7178 subsection A, 1 states that the commission is required to collect fees and annual charges equal to all costs incurred by the commission in a relevant fiscal year. That leads to a structure that implicates possible temptation. The reason is that the statute establishes a floor for the commission, not a ceiling. The commission, under the statutory structure on its face, is allowed to spend whatever the commission wishes in its discretion. It's allowed to collect whatever fees it wants to in its discretion. There's no limit on what it can spend. And that leads to, as detailed in our briefs, that leads to the implication of the possible temptation doctrine, because the commission is directly responsible for adjudicating the source of all its funding. It is responsible for collecting the fees. It's responsible for setting the fees. It's responsible for establishing how many pipelines exist. Without the pipeline industry, the commission doesn't exist.
Yeah, it does. We have all kinds of electric cases that come up in the commission also.
I'm sorry, Ron?
We have all kinds of electric cases that come up in the commission also.
Well,
commission doesn't cease to exist if pipelines completely go away.
Well, I may have overstated that.
You did.
But the commission certainly, the health of the commission certainly is dependent on the pipeline industry. And if the pipeline industry were to be negatively affected, the commission would be negatively affected as well. Commission, in its response to Jersey City's claims against it, it skirts the issue of whether, on its face, the statutory structure is constitutionally infirm. If you parse the arguments out, what the commission actually does is it says, from a practical standpoint, we impose limitations on ourselves. We have this pre-filing process. We listen to Congress when they appropriate our funds, but we know that in practice that's not correct. In 2007, the commission overspent its congressional appropriation by $3 million. In 2012, it overspent it by $300,000. So again, there's no limitation from Congress on collecting these fees. As far as the the pre-filing process, what the commission has said is that our pre-filing process is perfect. We've approved 160 straight pipelines because our pre-filing process is so perfect that there's never any reason to deny a pipeline company application. Well, we know that also is not true, and the demonstration of the pre-filing process being infirm is the fact that Jersey City is standing here today challenging the issuance of an order. If the pre-filing process did, in fact, take into consideration and take into account all the relevant parties, accounted for proper routing, siting, environmental issues, safety issues of the public, we wouldn't be standing here today. If the court has no specific questions, right, we'll just rest on our papers.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Zimmerman?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. I may have to come down with a cold. May I please the court, I'm here today representing the environmental petitioners in this case. The key issue is that FERC relied on two consultants' reports commissioned by the Gap Pipeline Company that were not submitted before the certificate order was issued. In other words, they were not part of the record. In fact, they were submitted as attachments to an answer the pipeline companies attempted to file in response to the petitions for rehearing by my clients. In July of 2012, the Deputy Secretary of the Commission rejected the proposed answer and said under Commission rules they would not be entertained. That applied to the two consultant reports as well. Then in October of 2012, in issuing an order denying rehearing, the Commission waived its rule that precluded considering an answer to a request for rehearing and relied extensively on these two reports in making its decision to deny rehearing. In fact, I think it's fair to say that without these two reports, the Commission would not have been able to deny rehearing in the fashion that it did.
May I ask you a question about the coalition standing?
Yes, sir.
To be here. Now, as I understand it, you all claim that members of your organization may suffer lung cancer due to exposure to radon, and that there's the possibility of and that there may be a cyber attack on the pipeline system that would be catastrophic. Now, we have case law in our circuit precedent about harm and increased risk of future harm, but I don't think that's the standard anymore. After Clapper, the Supreme Court's telling us when we're looking at future harm that there's a certainty. There needs to be a certainty of harm. Is there a certainty that any of the members of your organizations will be exposed to radon at levels that may cause their health to deteriorate? Or is there a certainty that there will be a cybersecurity attack on this pipeline that will...
There is a certainty that they will be exposed to more radon than they currently are being exposed to.
How's that certain?
Because the shale gas that is going to be flowing into New York City, in fact, is now, they have started the use of this pipeline, is coming from an area,
right,
in part, yeah, that has the higher concentrations of radon and radium in the natural
but
gas.
But it's my understanding that if that's transported or stored at all over time, that the risk diminishes significantly. And have you shown that, in fact, it will not be transported in a fashion or stored in a fashion or mixed with other sources that will reduce it? Perhaps there's no question that if you took the natural gas directly from the shale in Pennsylvania and took it to an apartment in Manhattan, right, instantaneously, perhaps there would be some problems. But that's not what's going to happen. And have you shown?
One thing you need to keep in mind, yeah, is there is no safe level for, right, exposure to radon.
Right.
Radon is the second leading cause of cancer nationwide and the leading cause if you don't consider smoking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So our clients are being exposed to more radon when the Marcellus gas from Pennsylvania enters the system, and it's fairly well shown. We documented precisely in our reply brief how this gas is going to reach New York, New Jersey, and New York consumers.
Is there any causation problem here with the chain requiring the acts and choices of third parties?
We don't believe so, Your Honor. Every step in the process is in place. There are hundreds and hundreds of producing wells in northeastern Pennsylvania and southwestern Pennsylvania where two pipelines connect to New York City. They all produce excess radon. To come back to the key issue here is these two reports were never made available to the public to review. In fact, the process by which they got before the commission never had an opportunity for the public to ever review these documents, which is contrary to the policy and regulations of the President's Council on Environmental Quality and contrary to FERC's own regulation. We think that on a rehearing, those issues could be explored and an appropriate condition could be added to the certificates issued in this case. I see my time has expired.
All right, thank you. Ms. Amarkale?
May it please the Court, Jennifer Amarkale for the Commission. I'll address Judge Griffith's question first about standing with regard to the coalition. You're right, Judge Griffith, that there is no information in the record or provided by the coalition that shows whether the gas that is being produced in the Marcellus Shale region, whether that will be processed and thereby the radon reduced through the processing, or that it will reduce as it travels through from the wellhead through to the distribution lines. And then the other big question is, what will the mix of gas be? Yes, the coalition has shown that some wells in Pennsylvania are producing in two counties in Pennsylvania, but we have no idea about how much gas is coming out of those wells relative to the other gas that's available on the pipeline. So the mix of gases on the pipeline will reduce any radon, or at least has the potential.
If this were being brought before Clapper, What's the result on standing?
Before Clapper, you still have the substantial increased risk that you have to show through Mountain States Legal and through Public Citizen, and Coalition hasn't met that showing either. They haven't shown that there's any substantial increase in exposure to radon, much less that the harm, that there's a substantial harm. They confuse two measures of radon. One is the ambient air radon, which at 4 picocuries per liter is where EPA requires mitigate or suggests that mitigation should be aggressive. The 15, 16, 17 picocuries per liter level of the gas in the brief of coalition is actually the gas in the pipeline. So it will be reduced as the half-life occurs and it travels through to the distribution lines. But more importantly, as it's dispersed, it will be the ambient air measurement will be much, much less, 1,000 times less than the 16 or 17 picocuries per liter that's in the pipeline. And that's because you have to take into account that the radon in the gas is going to be diluted once it comes into the home. There will be air changes, there will be ventilation, and the whole volume of the air has to be taken into account. So,
but you recognize that sounds a little scary when you're talking about once radon comes into the home.
Well, that's true, Your Honor, and the commission really is quite concerned about health and safety impacts, and it looks into these effects, and where it can mitigate those effects, it does. Here it didn't find any reason that it actually found that there would be no threat from the level of radon in the gas, that once it travels through to the distribution and is dispersed in the ambient air, that it won't be any higher than the ambient air levels. The issue about the two studies not being in the record.
Yeah, that's a good question. Tell us what you have to say about that.
So the commission waived its regulations that do not allow answers to rehearing requests. That's at paragraph 6, mm-hmm. note 4 in the rehearing order, JA-71. Those were allowed into the record, and the commission did review them. But more importantly,
did anybody have a chance from the public or anywhere else to object to or respond to what is in those?
Well, certainly the public had an ability to respond to the four studies that the commission reviewed and relied on, both in the final environmental impact statement and in the rehearing order where it reviewed those. And
I thought these two that we're talking about now came in at the rehearing stage, the motion to rehear stage.
They came in after the request for rehearing.
At that point, after they were received, did anybody have a chance to refute them or comment on them?
No one commented on them.
Did they have a chance to? And counsel, I think you understand my question, don't you? Don't answer a different question. Answer what I'm asking you.
Well, the commission's procedures generally don't allow those kinds of comments. So
would that be a no?
No.
Okay, thank you.
But the commission relied on the earlier studies, even in the rehearing order, and it refuted the study submitted by the coalition. It allowed that study in, even though no one had an opportunity to comment on that. No, the public did not have an opportunity to comment on it. I'd like to turn to the Jersey City claims, if I may. Council has said that on its face, the statute is unconstitutional. It appears that that's a facial challenge to the Budget Act. And under a facial challenge to the Budget Act, which is a statute that this court does not have direct review over, the court would have to dismiss that facial challenge because it's not properly brought in this court. It's more properly brought as a federal question under federal question jurisdiction 28 U.S. Code section 1331. Pre-filing is not a limitation on the commission. Pre-filing is a process that is on the record. It's docketed. Many of the transcripts from discussions are put into the record. So pre-filing is an important process for the commission because it allows the commission to provide input and give guidance so that the applications that do come in are better formed, more viable. And counsel for Jersey City was wrong to say that Congress doesn't limit the commission. The commission is appropriations are set by Congress every year. If it does not spend its prior year's appropriation, it may carry that over into the next year, which is what happened with the $3 million. I see that my time has expired.
All right,
if you have any other questions.
Mr. Elwood?
May it please the Court, John Elwood for the interveners. I just want to make 2 points. First, with respect to the question of the radon, counsel for the coalition said that there was a certainty that they would be exposed to more radon. And that is not the standard. The standard is whether they are injured by the amount of radon they are exposed to. And I don't think there's any dispute that the quantities that are in the pipeline, which were measured near the delivery points, we have a very good idea of what is being delivered, is about 17 picocuries per liter, which the risk analysis study said presented a negligible risk of harm to domestic gas users. And it's one-tenth of the level that was measured in the Gogolak study. This is all on the record. And at a level of 151 picocuries per liter, the Department of Energy concluded it didn't present a risk to domestic gas users. And this is a little bit over a tenth of that level. And I think at that level, it's very hard to say that there's any harm at all. I think in addition to that, they said that it was certainly they would be exposed to more radon in the gas. If I could just direct the Court's attention to a document in the Joint Appendix, JA-499, which is in Volume 2. It's a map of the pipelines in the area. I think you can get the way the challengers presented, it sounds pretty much like we're building a pipeline straight from Marcellus Shale into New York. In fact, what is being built is essentially a spur off an international network of pipelines there, which were already had Marcellus gas in them. There's pipelines coming down and into northern New York, into uptown New York. And all that is different is that it now means that there's competition in the gas market, or that there's additional sources of supply, so that there's a more reliable source. Now, with respect to the issue of whether this information was in the record and could have been considered, the one point that, may I finish, Your Honor?
Sure.
Is worth making is that the reason why the company introduced these studies was to respond to a report which the challengers introduced 2 days before the certificate order was filed. And it's not uncommon for information to be introduced late enough in the process that the agency considers it, but the public doesn't have an opportunity to comment. But I think one thing that is worth noting is that the main people who were commenting on the radon issues were the challengers. And in all this briefing, they haven't pointed out anything that they would have said in that comment period if it had been held open, if they had been allowed to submit additional comments. If there are no further comments, we'll rely on our submission.
I do have a question about, and you may not know the answer. Is radon like asbestos? That is, if you don't disturb it, it's naturally occurring. I mean, I know they both are. But is that what gives the risk? It's all over as long as you don't disturb it.
The risk is that it is just it is a gas. It decays, has a half-life of 3.8 days, so it diminishes very rapidly. But it's not like asbestos in the sense that it doesn't remain around. It basically it decays over time, over a fairly short period of time, and then it doesn't present a risk at that point.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Anybody have any time left? All right. Mr. Watson, if you want a minute. Mr. Zimmerman, if you want a minute. Okay.
I just want to address really quickly issue of jurisdiction. The court is aware, of course, that it has jurisdiction to review the commission's orders. And what Jersey City is challenging, it's not a facial challenge. It's a challenge to the order. And the way we're challenging the order is by pointing to the general process of how these orders are issued, as well as the specific instance of this particular order, and the general process is evidence of the constitutional it being infirm, and also in this particular instance, it's also a specific example of the constitutional difficulties of the process. And if the court has no further questions, we'll just rest on this.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Henderson, let me address your issue first. Radon is a noble gas, which means that it does not interact with anything else. It will not, you cannot burn it. It is present around us all the time. But the regulatory policy of this country has always been that exposures to radioactivity should be kept as low as reasonably achievable, which means that you try to control man-made sources because you can't control natural sources. In this instance, the historical figure for the amount of radon in the natural gas consumed in New York City, and almost everybody in New York cooks with gas, was about 1.5 picocuries per liter. The 15 to 17 picocuries that council referred to were data points collected by the industry after the record in this case closed and before anybody had an opportunity, Judge Santel, to respond to the submission. That 15 picocuries, 17 picocuries actually at Lambertville, would only decay by about one picocurie during the transit time from Lambertville to New York City. So the risk in New York City would be 10 times what it previously had been when this gas becomes part of the system. And I believe that the lines that you can see running through northeastern Pennsylvania, the Tennessee gas pipeline, goes to Mahwah, New Jersey, where it connects by a bidirectional flow to this pipeline into Manhattan. The other line that goes through southwestern Virginia, Pennsylvania, another producing area, goes through Texas Eastern directly into New York City. So the causation connection is there from a standing standpoint. If there are no further questions, thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you.